I was going to share some personal reflections, and I think this is the right time to do it. There's an interesting word from the Baal Mussar, Parshas Toldos. You see the birth of the twins, of Yaakov and Esav. And as we continue with the story, we see that Rivka, when the Torah refers to her vis-a-vis her children, it explicitly calls Esav Beno HaGadol, her older son, big son. And it's Mamash Pella. I can say from personal experience, you can look at the statistics, twins generally are born pretty closely one after another. I think the average is something like 6 minutes. Okay?
Nine minutes,
okay. My first set of twins were born 22 minutes apart, which is considered long. The younger twins were just a minute apart. But the average is, and we think about what the Torah describes, Yaakov and Esav, one after another, right? Yaakov's mom is holding on to the heel of Esav. How much longer could it have been that took till Yaakov came out? And nevertheless, how old Dovru is? Isn't it fascinating that Rivka thinks of her son Esav as, oh, that's my big son, right? The big kid in the family. Usually it's the older kids, a couple years difference, right? My big son. That is strange to begin with, because they were probably not more than a couple minutes apart. But also take into account that at the point, at the time of that story, how old were Yaakov and Esav? Any idea? The time when they took the brachos, the end of the parsha. 63 years old. He's old enough to be a grandfather, right? This is my big son Esav and my little son Yaakov. There's 80s, right? What's up, Shot? It sounds like a funny question, but there's something deep there. So I must just say, very, very simple, very, very simple pshat. Rivka's mida, the mida of tzaddikus, mida of a very big person, is that, like we began to discuss earlier, those minutes, those small windows in time, are literally what make all the difference between a gadol and a katan, my big son, my little son, and between a gadol of a person and a katan of a person. Rivka was who she was because from the time she's 3 years old, when Eliezer finds her in Parshas Chayisara, the Baal Mussar point out, Levi Elio and others, we see this in the Brisker Rav also, it's very unusual how you see again and again in the story of Rivka serving Eliezer and giving water to the camels, Vatimoher. She did this quickly. She did that. She ran here. She ran there. It even says, Vatimoher, she speedily, quickly took the jug that was on her shoulder and poured it out. Right? Clock it. How long can that take? To go here, pour it out onto the ground, pour it out into the trough for the animals to eat from. We're talking about, right? So how much faster can you do that? Nevertheless, everything she did was with a Vatimoher. The Mida of Rivka was to value each second and even translate 63 or more than 80 some years later, when she was talking about her children, one was the big one, one was the small one, even if there was only seconds or minutes between one and the next. It's a huge yisod. B'chanan, even though this was the trend in his day, walking through the cold and the mud in the streets of Slobodka, and in Lithuania, people have these big, tall boots that you lace up like, ice skates, all the way to the top, up to their knees. He insisted on slip-on shoes. He said, I can't afford to waste so much time every second that counts. Putting on my shoes, I got to get to shul, I got to get to the base medrash. Countercultural. He had his own trend. He had his own fashion. I can't wear boots like that. Why is this on our minds right now? So, my first encounter with Chaim Kanievsky was a question that I sent him. Those of you who were here earlier, I showed you I have a whole pack of envelopes over here. A few dozen questions over the years that I sent in. Most of them, I would say, in the early, mid-2000s, 10, 15 years plus ago. And the first time I sent him a letter, I'll be honest with you, I never sent the Gadol a letter. Someone told me that he was very good about answering questions. The rumor, I'm not sure this is 100% true, it was always true, the rumor is that Chaim would come home from shul, and he would have breakfast with his wife, with the Rebbesin. She would read him questions, and in between bites, wasting no time, he would give answers. And she would write them down and then send them out. I think some of them are in his handwriting. I'm not sure if that was always the case, but interesting story nonetheless. We heard yesterday about how Chaim was makbid to always eat his meals with his wife. He wouldn't start eating until she was there. If she wasn't ready, he would sit down and he would open a gemara until she was ready. So how did I know how to send a letter to a gadol? So when I was younger, my brother had a hobby of sending baseball cards. Lahavdil Elif Alfei Avdalos to baseball players, major leagues, to get their autograph. And very often they would send it back. So how do you get them to send it back? They're busy. So you send inside. We had their addresses, a self-addressed stamped envelope. Okay, when people communicated more with snail mail, you know, so everyone knew SASE, self-addressed stamped envelope. It used to be that's how you enter raffles. It wasn't by email, you know, like there was a contest on the back of the cereal box. You had to send in a self-addressed stamped envelope so they can let you know if you won. Great. So you send the letter. And you put a little envelope, see, tiny envelopes, in a big envelope with a stamp. I used to get these Eretz Yisrael, like a 2 shekel and 40 agorot. Okay, either I went myself to the post office in Israel or I sent a friend who was learning there, you know, buy me 30, 40 shekel of stamps, bring them home. So I sent an American stamp going to Bnei Brak and an Israeli stamp coming home. So I sent him a few shilas. At some point I wrote down, I'll explain to you why. I wrote down the questions before I sent them off. So, I folded up a nice piece of computer paper, something like this, inside the envelope. So he sends me back the envelope with my folded paper, 8.5 by 11, just as blank as it was before, and a tiny scrap of a blue notepad, like, not just like this, but like ripped off with like a two-word answer on it. And it was known that Reb Chaim answered everything in one or two words, always. But I didn't understand, like, I gave you, why, I feel bad, why did I take your paper, to scrap? It was just, like, strange to me. I was very appreciative I got to answer my question. But why, I gave you the paper, why do you rip off a little scrap from a notepad? So a little time went by, and I was at a Sheva Brachas for a friend of mine, Chavusa, and I was talking to someone who was attending the Sheva Brachas. I told him the story. And I told him that I couldn't figure out what the pshat was. And he said, I had the answer. I'll tell you a different story about Reb Chaim Kanievsky. He said to me, someone I know had to ask Reb Chaim how to spell his name in the ksuba. You know, sometimes you have questions how to spell the location, how you spell the names. So he sent him the question. And let's say the guy's name was Dov. And let's say the shaila was, do I write Dalad Beis or Dalad Vav Beis, Dov, whatever, you know, something along those lines. Just keep it simple. So he got back a blank piece of paper, an empty envelope from Chaim Kanievsky. He just sent it back the same piece of paper, that he sent him. He couldn't figure out what's up shot. So the guy went to Bnei Brak. He was getting married. He needed to get the answer. So he says, Rebbe, can I please have the answer to my question? He's like, what's the matter? Look at the envelope. I addressed it to you, and I wrote the answer. The answer is your name. I spelled it the way it's supposed to be spelled. Why do I need to take the answer to get inside the envelope? I almost fell off my seat. I fell off my seat because, first of all, obviously, but no one does that, right? But in Reb Chaim's world, which is a world we should all wish we lived in, every drop of ink, every moment it takes to write that answer, why would you write it again? I provided the answer. Why waste more ink? Why waste more paper? Everything Hashem gives us is so precious. Yaakov Avinu, crossing the river in the middle of the night to get the Pachan Katan. A gadol thinks like that. Rivka Imenu, every second, a gadol thinks like that, right? So I understood the answer to my question. I said, why would I waste a whole piece of paper to give you an answer when I can answer to you on a little piece of scrap of paper that my grandkids brought over, something lying around the house. Every moment counted. And it's no surprise that he wrote his answers so tersely, so concisely, That's why I had to start writing down my question, because sometimes it would take a month or two, or maybe more, 3 months, till I got my answer back. I forgot what my question was already, because he just wrote Cain or Lo or something like that. So I had to write down the questions. He would write, Al Beis Gimel Dalet Hei, you know, like sometimes I'd send him 4 or 5 questions at a time, and every question was precise, but very, you know, very pointedly answered exactly what I asked and no more. And because when you would go out to his house and you see the people waiting online, from the time he left Mincha, at walking home, people were already, you know, crowding around him, asking him questions, and I remember doing that also, you know, and the line of people that were waiting for him when he got to his house. He couldn't afford to. Every moment he had was for Klal Yisrael. And when he wasn't for Klal Yisrael, it was for his learning. That's what makes a gadol. And that helped me understand something else I heard just yesterday. I don't know why I never appreciated this. 25 years ago, I remember friends of mine going to get a bracha from Chaim Kamievsky. And he didn't say very much. Obviously, it was a more involved question. You know, sometimes there was a response, but people just came for a bracha, or, you know, the this or that, shidduch, you know. So he would say, bracha v'atzlacha. Bracha v'atzlacha. And he would go on to the next person. And maybe you've seen pictures of him, you know, more recently. He was involved with some of the tzedakah organizations, give $180, the gedolim are going to daven for, you know, he'd have these long lists of hundreds, thousands of people who he's supposed to daven for. Bracha v'atzlacha. In more recent years, he started responding differently. Buha. Buha. What's buha? It's an abbreviation. Who speaks in abbreviations? We don't speak in abbreviations, right? You don't say basad. Okay? So I want to say the only reason why they're in text language and emoji language and, you know, like the way we communicate, you know, we use abbreviation. It's only because Chaim Kanessi brought it into the world. Okay? His midah, he gives his brachos in Rosh Tevos. So let's just reflect for a second. Why would he do that, right? He cared so much. Those guys who saw the video yesterday, he took it on his shoulders to be the one to sit and just accept people after the Chazanish, right? So the story of the Chazanish died, and people had nowhere to go. They used to come after shul, go to the Chazanish house, wish him a good Shabbos, and move on, go home. And he saw it after his father, there was no one to say good Shabbos to. And he was mafkir himself. He made himself open to Klal Yisrael to just come and say good Shabbos, because people need to have that interaction. And nevertheless, his brachos were abbreviated. So imagine if there's 100 people online waiting for you, and you abbreviate it from Baruch Hashem to Baruch HaTzach, at the end of the line, you probably saved a couple minutes. That would be insignificant to most of us. But like we said before, every moment, every second, every drop of ink counted. Every drop of ink counted. So he had to speak like that. So Zelu Mazel also Okim. If a gadol can give a bracha in abbreviation, then we should think of when we abbreviate in a text, that's not stam. Think of it in a deeper, more significant way, that if it's it has meaning, that I should be thinking about my life with a zrizus, not just because it's easier and I'm lazy, right? Why do we cut corners? Either because you're lazy, or because you have a greater value for time that you're not going to squander. And I think what really brings it home is the point, they're just going to repeat it for those of you who weren't here earlier, that's the same notion of Chaim Kanievsky twice in his life spoke on a telephone. We can't even understand why that's something praiseworthy, why we should think of that as such an amazing feat. It sounds backwards. It's hard to explain to anyone why that's something praiseworthy. So the answer is because where he was holding that ever so slight deviation from his schedule, from his routine, from his accessibility, from his behavior would have changed who he was. It may have only changed who he was in an imperceptible way, but the lesson of Rav Chaim's life and how he became who he was appreciating that the things that are imperceptible to the common man, like those minutes, those seconds, those drops of ink, those pieces of paper, those scraps, are exactly what made him who he was. Henry Ford, who was the innovator of building cars with the assembly line to move things along faster, he said, "It's been my experience that most people get ahead during the time that others waste time." So true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when Moshe Rabbeinu, when he engraved the second Luchos, so what did he use? he used a special sapphire that Hashem granted and blessed him with. Why do you have to bless him with this these precious gems? Because Moshe Rabbeinu lost out on the biggest get-rich-quick scheme in the history of Klal Yisrael. What was it? The Jews were leaving Mitzrayim. Hashem told them all to collect gold and silver from their neighbors, from the Egyptians, right? Who was the only person, Chazal say, who wasn't able to go around and strike a rift like that?
Moshe.
Why? What was he busy doing?
He was humble and a leader.
He was taking the Aron of Yosef, preparing it to take it out of Mitzrayim. Later, after the Shir Hayam, the people are collecting all the gold and silver that washed up on the seashore, and Moshe Rabbeinu comes along and takes it and has to take the people away. He had to push them away and move them along, because he wasn't taking anything for himself. So Hashem blessed him with this collection of sapphire that was very special that was used to engrave Luchos. So Moshe Feinstein asks, I understand, you want to make him rich because he didn't have a chance to get rich. So give him a pot of gold, you know? I don't know, give him some stocks in a company that do it. What's the shaychus? Moshe was given the scraps that were left over from the stones, the shavings and the shattered pieces after engraving a little. Why give him the shattered pieces? Give him something chashuv. To show, Ramosha explains, that the miles of Torah Moshe Rabbeinu was able to reach, what anyone is able to reach, is with the scraps, with the little bit of time that everyone else negates and squanders and doesn't take seriously. And whatever person's aspirations and godless in life will be, has the potential to be, hopefully in Torah, doesn't have to be, you know, with the aspiration of being the Gadol HaDor, but whatever you reach in your own personal learning will be a product of how you take advantage of those moments that everyone else is wasting. In Chesed, in Yir Shamayim, in Musar, and certainly in Torah, as Reb Chaim showed us. And we all have to use that. Pesach is around the corner. The Chipazon. We left Mitzrayim in a rush. And that's the lesson of the matzah, that every single second counts. That difference between kosher, not kosher, chametz, not chametz, is that moment, just that moment. And I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I was able to get that, to learn that firsthand from Reb Chaim. Just throw in one thing, you know, once telling personal stories, I meant, for those of you who had the chance, I recommend you sign up. There's a WhatsApp group that was shared, being run in Yeshiva University. The Orchaz Yosher, Reb Chaim's Musar Sefer, has 30 chapters, and try to learn a summary of each chapter, one a day, during the Shloshim. Sign up for it, you know, something like 5 minutes, whatever. So I gave the one on the introduction and Perek Aleph. And we went through a little bit of it yesterday with the meat of Emes. Just want to add quotes over here from the Sefer Hasidim, that a person who's makbid about Emes, that all his thoughts and his words are true and will be, and he'll be able to fulfill them. The Ribbono Shel Olam, Mida Kenegen Mida, returns the favor by ensuring that all the words and thoughts that he utters will come true. If you're determined to only think and speak emes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make sure that what you think and speak will turn out to be emes. And some Reb Chaim, who knew the koch of his tefillos and his brachos, because he witnessed firsthand how every day hundreds and thousands of people sought him out for brachos and for tefillos, could firsthand feel how much his perfection of emes must have been at the root of his ability to give brachos and give and effective tefillos on behalf of other people. So this was something he lived by. And part of emes, as he continues, is sometimes to say, I don't know. Right? When someone asks you a question and you can't over the answer, not to make something up, not to embellish, not to fumfer, but to say any odeya. And he quotes the Gemara brachos that says, Lameid Lashoncha Lomar any odeya. Don't fool around. If you say something that's not entirely true, not accurate and precise, you might come to regret it's going to catch up with you. So sometimes you say, I don't know. So I would say, as many questions as I did get answers to from Rav Chaim Kanievsky, very valuable and very practical, every once in a while he wrote me, he said, Tzarachim. He said, unclear, it's unclear to me. He wasn't afraid to say that I don't have an answer to you. But what's even more unbelievable is that one answer that he sent me to a question was, Ineni Posek Tifne lamori chami shlita. I'm not a posek. Go ask my father-in-law, Rabbi Yashiv. And the reason why that blew me away is because already 25 years ago, the Sefer Ishei Yisrael, maybe some of you have seen it, it's like an authoritative, fat compilation of everything there is to know about Hilchos Tefillah, written with the same structure as a Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. And in the back, there's some 200, 300 Q&A responses from Chaim and Hilchos Tefillah that we used to help write the book. And again, it's an authoritative book that it's all over. Every base medrash has that sefer. And when I got that answer, I said to myself, you're not a posek? Any halacha book, I told you guys, any halacha book that comes out has to have your haskalah and has to have your responses to all the relevant questions in the back, including 25 years ago that was already true. And how many more swarms since then are just Q&A. Rav Chaim telling us how to do this, how to do that, what the chazan issue. And nevertheless, there were some questions that he said, it's not me, it's not for me to answer. So he understood what his place was, which again, we can hardly imagine where his place wasn't. But sometimes he said, next time you're in B'nai Brak, come and find me. Okay, that was great to hold that letter up, you know. But sometimes he said, ask Rabbi Yashiv. He's the right person to ask, not me. And so the anivas, the MS, and the zerizas, and the value of every second. That's what I think we should all walk away from. Remembering, I'm going to ask you.
Can we see the letters?